Welcome to the Wealth Experience podcast series, where our subject matter experts provide the latest updates on what's happening in the world around us. Brought to you by BMO Private Wealth.
Good day, everybody. My name is Sue Van Bleesboit. I'm a Senior Vice President and National Sales Manager with BMO Private Wealth. Today, I'm joined by a gentleman who needs no introduction, BMO Capital Markets Chief Investment Strategist, Brian Belsky. Brian, welcome and thank you for taking some time today, sir.
Thank you so much for having us, Phil.
We are recording this podcast on November the 4th, the day after, as we say, and that day will undoubtedly be known as the longest day in the history of Trump's presidency. There's so much unknown at this point, but let's talk about what we do know. The markets are reacting surprisingly well given this uncertainty over election results. And has that come to you in any surprising way?
No, it doesn't, because let's face it, 2020 has been a year of surprises. And I think it's one that we have been quoting to our investors around the world and our clients in terms of controlling what you could control. At the end of the day, U.S. stock market, in our view, remains the most attractive equity asset in the world. Canada's not too far behind, by the way. And we are not surprised, especially considering on a short-term basis how negative prices were in October. But more importantly, I think, quite frankly, even though we don't know the absolute conclusion of the U.S. presidential election, I think there is some solace with respect to feelings and sentiment, at least so far in the early hours following the non-decision last night, that gridlock indeed could be a very good thing for markets, as it usually is. So I think on at least a short-term basis, investors are reacting to that.
Okay, and speaking of gridlock, we'll get back to that in a second, but a little bit of research would tell you 1877, I think I heard you mention on a previous comment, and 2000, the year 2000, had extended periods for election results to be accepted. Are there parallels to be drawn from those dates and what we're living through today?
Well, the construct of U.S. GDP and government and electoral votes obviously is dramatically different than what was occurring in 1877. If you know your American history, that was following Ulysses S. Grant's two-term presidency. Remember, Ulysses S. Grant was the Union general and head of the troops with respect to the Civil War, and the United States was deep into Reconstruction at that time point. The biggest issue that dragged on for 4 or 5 months, and again, don't focus on the 4 or 5 months, and that's why you can't, I mean, it's in the historical parallel that has happened before, but because we are reconstructing the Union, there was some notion and back and forth in terms of the legality of the electoral voting system. In 1960, we didn't know that President Kennedy was President Kennedy elect until the next day. That was the cleanest kind of delay. And then, of course, 2000 was the quote-unquote hanging chad issue in terms of ratifying the election results in the state of Florida. That took 37 days. I think the difference this time around, Phil, is that we're dealing with actual votes and the counting of votes, and this is up to the states on the states in question, specifically Nevada and Pennsylvania, in the days that follow. We think that the quote-unquote cleanliness of a decision, in our view, applying an objective common sense viewpoint, could be faster than 37 days.
Understood. And speaking of that, rhymes with uncertainty, I suspect, and the markets don't like uncertainty. So what does it mean for us this time around?
Well, what it means for us this time around is our continued view is control what you can control. And that, again, has been our theme for all of 2020. The last thing we want people to do really do during the depths of COVID was try to be a closet epidemiologist. We don't want to be a closet policy analyst here either. We're investment strategists. We're investors. I think you're going to hear a continued rhetoric and a lot of emotion. I think in being very objective in terms of how wrong the polls were, I think investors would be doing themselves a huge disservice to listening to a lot of the rhetoric and just let this thing unfold. The process is what the process is, have faith in the United States government and how the checks and balances work on a state-by-state basis and the different branches of the government. I would say this, in investing, Phil, you want to purchase scarcity and sell capacity. And in the scarcity realm with respect to U.S. stocks in particular, are quality growth names quality companies that are liquid, that are real companies that you can reach out and touch their product and service. We're going back to good old-fashioned stock picking. And I think that's why you've seen such a strong rally today, not only in U.S. stocks in general, but in particular, communication services stocks and technology. The capacity side of things is volatility and uncertainty. Stay away from that. And the way that you can stay away from that is trying to speculate on who's ultimately going to be the winner in this. Just have solace that the process is going to work, that U.S. will prevail. And again, we continue to believe that that's going to bring Canada along for the ride.
Interesting. So a question on U.S. government gridlock that you mentioned a minute ago. What do you mean by gridlock, and what does it mean for investors when you referenced it a minute ago?
Well, gridlock means that you don't have a unified front in terms of one party in charge. Now, clearly, it looks like the Senate will remain Republican. The House will remain Democrat, although the Republicans did pick up a few more seats than consensus believed they would. And with a Republican president, which we have now until further notice, we've had gridlock for the last 2 years. And even if Mr. Biden is able to win the presidency, he too will have to deal with gridlock just because of a Republican-controlled Senate and a Democratically-controlled House. Now, there was, remember, the polls were indicating that there was a high potential for a blue wave, meaning the Democrats would be in charge of all three branches of the government that we just talked about, meaning the legislative, the House, the Senate, and the presidency, which really would give the Democrats a clean slate to be able to really push their agenda together. I think, by and large, Americans and the market typically don't like to have any kind of free checkbook and free clearance to do anything. And I think that's why part and parcel historically gridlock has been good for markets. And it's clearly good on the onset of this non-decision in the U.S. presidential election.
Okay, interesting. And so building on that theme, you speak about a blank checkbook. Let's speak a little bit about a relief package has been promised by Washington for some time. They're debating on the timing of it. Will this election result slow that down, and will the market still be hungry for that announcement when it comes?
Great question. You know, I believe that investing is like life, and politics is kind of like life, quite frankly, Phil. It's not what you say, it's what you do. And President Trump clearly wanted to have a relief package that was actually greater than what the Republican Senate wanted. It paled in comparison to what the House Democrats wanted. But again, this is where the subjectivity comes in. This is where the rhetoric comes in. And we will know when we know. I would venture to guess that there's a high likelihood that we see a piecemeal stimulus bill done before the new Congress comes in January 3rd. And I believe inauguration is January 21st. And so there will be stimulus. We know that it's coming. We just don't know how much it is. But we do know that the stock market, the economy have reacted in a positive manner to the stimulus. We also know that the Federal Reserve, especially relative to what occurred during the Great Recession 10 years ago, has been much more aggressive in terms of its policy. And thanks to some great research done by our great economics department headed by Doug Porter, it clearly looks like we're not going to see any kind of interest rate change from the Fed for 3 years, which means risk-free rates will be low, risk premiums will be high, which really continues to point toward continued equity outperformance.
Interesting. So that's a nice segue to my next thought, because we are with Brian Belsky and you're an investment strategist. So let's turn it up a little bit on themes and ideas. We love our Canadian banks as investment vehicles here, but they've been slower to recover lately. On an earlier comment today, you mentioned that Canadian banks would benefit from that gridlock. Can you expand on that? And have you got favorite themes to follow there?
Sure. Our favorite themes continue to be those banks that whose operations are very scalable, especially with respect to their operations in the United States. So that clearly puts a spotlight on BMO, our own bank, RBC, and TD because of their operations in the United States. In a potential blue wave, still, there would have been a potential additional corporate tax situation, especially on foreign banks doing business into the U.S., and that could have been a hindrance to the Canadian banks. Also, too, keep in mind that dividend growth and dividend income stocks have suffered this year because of the such strong focus in both markets, by the way, Canada and the United States, on growth stocks. We believe that equity income growth is going to be an excessively important theme going forward. And really, with a lack of a blue wave and the lack of potential stress in terms of dividend taxation going forward, actually put the, we believe, a bid into more of the dividend growth areas and higher paying dividend areas, which clearly in Canada are the Canadian banks. But in the United States, utilities, REITs, financials in particular, and technology for that matter, which are very strong dividend growth vehicles.
Interesting. And so I was going to ask, I think you probably beat me to the punch a little bit about your top three themes here or top storylines that our listeners should continue to watch. You've talked about the dividend and the equity income. Are there two other themes that you want to share with us today?
I would say the overarching theme would be this: when growth is scarce, growth outperforms. And there's three ways to think about growth still on a fundamental basis. There is secular growth, structural growth, and cyclical growth. Now, cyclical growth really centers around the feeling that value, small caps, will come back. And I don't think investors necessarily need to make the value call. I believe that the stock market is a market of stocks, and there are stocks in every sector that are going to give you, or most sectors, I'm sorry, they're going to give you some semblance of growth. And so from a cyclical type of value scenario, there's going to be money center banks that have multi-asset divisions that are going to do quite well in this environment, we believe, namely Bank of America, Morgan Stanley, JP Morgan, Goldman Sachs, our own stock BMO, TD, and RBC, that will benefit kind of in the environment and from a cyclical growth revival. So too will a stock called Ball Corp or West Fraser Timber or Waste Connections. We think they will benefit from a cyclical revival in earnings. With respect to structural growth, that's another way to think about what's happening in the marketplace. So this theme of the mobile society is a very, very big theme on growth overall. But in terms of structural growth, names like Shopify and PayPal and Nvidia and Visa and Home Depot and even Costco with respect to what's going on. And then lastly, in terms of longer-term secular growth, it's clearly about this notion of a theme that we've talked about for several years inside our BMO commentary and to clients would be that we believe technology stocks are the new consumer staple stocks. And that's never more evident than during the intense lockdown period in both countries, both the United States and Canada, where we all learned what Skype was and we all learned what WebEx was and we all learned how to use our FaceTime on our machines. So that basically focuses on names like Apple, Microsoft. And then lastly, in Google and Facebook and Netflix and Disney, these content things that are going to continue to be strong. We continue to think that that is a theme that will proceed going forward. Do not underestimate the importance of the mobile society and how technology fits into that. I think too many people are trying to play this move into value, into cyclical, and it's just way too early. We think, again, focus on high quality, focus on those companies that are providing you with growth that you can reach out and touch. And then lastly, just in terms of the big theme of stock picking still, I think too many investors the last 20 years have really focused too much on macro investing and quant investing, meaning formulaic investing, meaning X plus Y plus Z has to add up to whatever, and then that's what I'm buying or selling. No, it doesn't really work that way. Life doesn't work that way, by the way. So again, as I said previously, investing is kind of like life. You know, you want to have solace and feeling in terms of what you're buying and have strong conviction on a fundamental basis. And that's why we continue to think that, you know, the U.S. is the strongest asset in the world in terms of equities. And oh, by the way, Canada is coming along for the ride. Remember, as America goes, so goes Canada. The GDPs of both countries are very intertwined. And we've proven that in terms of how fundamentally Canada has been outperforming other developed markets, especially the last 12 to 18 months.
Very good. And I'll finish with this. It sounds like the secular bull market is alive and well. If this was a baseball game, what inning are we in for the secular bull? And what are you looking out to convince yourself that we might be coming to an end at some point, or is it too soon to tell?
Now, Phil, let's not put that negative hat on, quite frankly. I mean, listen, as we were very, very honored to be speaking to your clients and speaking to BMO and being very visible during the heights of the chaos and the fear of March and April. And we made it very clear that we believe the 20-year bull market was intact, that we believe that in writing and in several different podcasts and views, that we believe that markets bottomed on March 23rd, where that stock would rally 40 to 50%, that really kicked off the second half of the bull market. So in a baseball term, and as many people know, I'm a huge baseball fan. It saddened me all year long not to be able to go to a baseball game. It was a beautiful summer here in Minnesota. I think we're in the bottom of the fourth, the top of the fifth inning. I think we have 10 more years to go. But more importantly, I think the construct of the bull market is going to look a little bit different from every recession and from every correction or bear market. We've transitioned from despair to hope. And in that hope, we're going to have new leadership. We're going to have new restaurant concepts. We're going to have new retail concepts. We're going to have new technology concepts. And so the importance of these new technology leaders that are developing in the market, in the new vaccine that's coming along, and the new healthcare measures, we have to focus on the positive and the wherewithal and the prevailing strength of fundamentals to lead us there. That's why we think the bull market is very much alive. And that's why we're so strong believers in both the United States and Canadian stock market.
Fantastically said. Thank you so much. We are looking forward already to your 2021 outlook that I'm sure you're going to start thinking about pretty soon, Brian. If we had more time, we'd dig deeper into some of these nuances that you speak about. It means a lot to us and to our clients' portfolios. So on behalf of our listeners today, thank you so much for taking some time. We value your perspective and, above all, the work that you do to help us make some informed decisions. To our clients, please keep us in touch. Keep your wealth professional close by as we navigate these trying times, and we are certainly always available to provide an expert opinion on the state of affairs. Take care of yourselves, be well, and until next time, thank you for listening today. Thank you again so much, Brian, for joining us.
This podcast series has been brought to you by BMO Private Wealth. Please join us again.